Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
For the investigators, it's been really frustrating just because, you know, kind of pouring our hearts and soul into something and then just nothing really is coming back to us as far as good substantial leads. And in police work, if you work hard enough, something generally will come to you to work on. And it's just not been the case in this one. We've had lots of leads, but nothing that's been able to be substantiated as a solid lead. The case file for Martin Roberts is probably 3 feet tall, if you like printed out paper, and maybe a little taller. And then there's a whole lot of like Google. When you get a Google search warrants, it can come back with 8,000-9,000 pages worth of stuff. We don't print that out. We keep that in digital form, obviously. So who knows how much paper it would be if we printed everything out. But we've had some experts come in who really know their business and have them just go through everything and then with fresh eyes and try to give us new ideas. And then this week, you know, it's the year mark, Friday will be, and we're doing the same thing again, just trying to think of something. Somebody may have one idea that might lead us to him. The main message from us is the Boone Police Department hadn't given up hope. The Roberts family definitely hasn't given up hope. And we're going to keep looking until we find Martin. So if there's anybody listening that knows anything, even if you think it's not important, it may be very important to us. So if you know anything about it, please contact us.
Hello, and welcome to episode 74 of The Vanished. 19-year-old Martin Roberts disappeared from Boone, North Carolina on April 21st, 2016. Last week, you heard from Martin's dad, John Roberts, about the events leading up to Martin's disappearance and what they've learned since. This week, you'll get to hear from the Boone Police Department about their efforts to find Martin. This is part two of Martin's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500.
If you haven't listened to part one of Martin's story, I suggest pausing this here and listening to part one first. Otherwise, you might get totally lost. I spoke with Lieutenant Chris Hatton and Detective Kevin Wilson from the Boone Police Department this week. I had asked listeners to submit their questions, and I'd like to thank all of you who took the time to do just that. I got hundreds of emails and gathered the most frequently asked questions. Lieutenant Chris Hatton and Detective Kevin Wilson began by explaining the physical searches that were done to look for Martin.
We've done searches, so many different kinds of searches. Physically, when we initially got the report, we started to work on the areas that made the most sense as far as land searches. And so we started looking around Martin's apartment, around places that he was known to be. The terrain here in Boone is very difficult for these kinds of things. It's not just so easy that you can just go out and just look for somebody. It's not that easy at all because it's mountainous, really thick brush, briars, that kind of thing. And so it makes land searching really difficult without information. So we have done, I couldn't really tell you a number. We've done many, many land searches. We've also searched a few bodies of water. We've used North Catawba Fire and Rescue from Caldwell County. It's fantastic. They've allowed us to use their rescue equipment and their personnel to search bodies of water. We've used they have sonar, so we were able to use divers, law enforcement, or rescue divers, and then also the sonar equipment itself helps us to see what's down in the water. We've also used, for those same bodies of water, we used Dr. Lisa Briggs, who's employed by Western Carolina University. She runs a really successful cadaver dog, and she came up for us and searched the water areas and land areas around the water. And also the North Carolina SBI has provided us with search dogs, cadaver dogs, to search those areas as well. So a lot of different types of searches. And then if you also consider, you know, we did a lot of talking with businesses looking for any kind of surveillance footage that may have captured Martin at different times. So a lot of searches like that. And then that's just the actual physical searches. That's not even counting the digital searches that we've done, meaning, you know, for different companies and different information that you acquire through a search warrant.
Several listeners had asked if search dogs were used to track Martin's scent from the bus stop that he was seen speaking to a friend at.
Well, one of the issues with that is if you're familiar with the town, it's that bus station is directly in the middle of town. We got in touch with numerous different search folks that run search dogs, bloodhounds and such, and they said when he was reported missing was the day after that we actually have a digital video of him there. And they said with the thousands of people that walk from there, if you don't know where he went into the woods, there's no dog in the world that can just follow somebody from that area. They said you need to, I watched hours and hours of video. He never got on a bus, and we kind of just see him walking away from that bus stop, but we don't know a direction of travel from there. There's about a 30-foot pathway that he was walking on the sidewalk. And then if we had an area where we could have followed him, okay, he's going towards the woods this way, it's a little easier for a dog to narrow down. But, you know, a lot of folks have misconceptions about the dogs by watching TV or whatnot, but they said there's absolutely no way that their dogs are going to be able to do anything from that area, that literally any day you're going to have over 1,000 people right there because it's the main bus stop for the campus.
We know that Martin didn't take any devices with him when he left, but law enforcement has gone to great lengths to try to track down his digital trail leading up to his disappearance.
The first thing we did, if I'll back up a little bit, in terms of digital stuff, is when we first found out he was missing, we had luckily a really nice contact at the bank. He only dealt with one bank. And I was able to go to the bank, and we said, we've got a missing young man. She got, since the account was in his parents' name, actually went and pulled up every time he was using his card. We put a flag on his card if he used it anywhere. So we were thinking, you know, if he's gone somewhere, he does an ATM withdrawal, anything like that. And she actually went back and we looked. You know, there was no major withdrawals. He was almost always right there, as most college kids are, with, you know, $5 or $10 in his account. So we looked there. And then the issue with him digitally, he had a phone, a computer, and an iPad, which he left. You know, if those things were with him, we can call the phone company and they can immediately start tracking those things. Unfortunately, one of them was off. And talking to his roommate, his phone had been broken. So most of his communication was through that iPad. And the issue with that is, if you're familiar with Apple products, he's actually using the internet as opposed to the actual devices, location services. So he's on the internet using that stuff. And it's almost impossible to track unless you can get into those devices because he's using Wi-Fi. We actually tracked a couple places that he used Wi-Fi that week that were on campus, but all they do is show an IP address that is associated with that. And that was from a Google search I did, and it did show that he had gotten on his email, you know, previous to leaving, and he was using Wi-Fi at one area of campus. But that was, you know, 3 or 4 days before he is gone. And unfortunately, those devices were password protected and locked, and we were never able to get into those. There's not experts that can actually do that. So it's very difficult.
Do you remember the controversy surrounding Apple when the FBI wanted them to unlock the phones that belonged to the San Bernardino shooters? Apple strongly values the privacy of its users, which can cause hurdles for law enforcement when they want to get into an Apple device, but there are some workarounds.
I actually had a couple really good phone calls with Apple, and from the folks I talked to who are law enforcement, they have a good liaison, and they said, it's not us. We value security so much that basically that phone, every time it restarts, has a new password. So unless you have that person's password, they did give me an idea. They said a great idea is with the Apple phone, if you put in the wrong password 10 times, it will reset, wipe everything off the phone, but it uploads it to the person's Apple iCloud. So I was able to do a search warrant for his Apple iCloud. And once that was in place, we had his phone where we tried to unlock it, and it uploaded everything to that. But unfortunately, it uploaded nothing to the iCloud, just a couple emails from Google. And then I went back and did a couple Google search warrants and got that stuff. But there was, nothing that we really wanted. What it doesn't download or upload is your locations, websites you visited, things like that, which is really what would have been the good stuff from that Apple product.
Not all of Martin's devices were Apple products. They found an interesting internet search on a laptop from about a month before he went missing.
And he did have one device that wasn't an Apple. It was like an old Dell. The Dell did have a search from about almost exactly a month prior. And this actually turned us in a different direction. That's why we were so diligent in checking the military. He had looked up like a Google search for a Marine recruiter and workout programs for joining the military. So, we immediately focused all our resources. Let's get in touch with folks from the military. We did a couple local ones, did some stuff, and then I actually was able to talk to somebody that actually is part of the National MEPSCOM, which is a Military Entrance Processing Command Center. And he said, we've ran his social security number. We've done stuff with his everything we can possibly do with this human. He is not in our military. And he said, post 9/11, it's almost impossible to get in the military without some type of valid ID. And they checked everything they could. We had an ID that wasn't, it was a fictitious ID that the young man had made probably to purchase alcohol. We ran those numbers with them, and they said, we don't have any record of this person, but we're going to keep checking. So that was our immediate thought. But again, that was about a month before he went missing.
The idea that Martin may have been contemplating joining the military really made me wonder if he was unhappy with the course that his life was on and was looking for a change. Maybe the military wasn't the change that he ended up deciding on and he picked something else entirely, but it does give me hope that he's still out there and no one's figured out what that something else may be just yet. With that said, in a case like Martin's, you always have to consider the possibility of self-harm. One thing that I had wondered about was whether there are any statistics out there regarding the distance to search for someone who is thought to have possibly committed suicide.
Well, I don't have it in front of me. I didn't know about this question, of course, until just now. But we did do some research into that really early on. And there is quite a bit of research out there about where we find lost people. And so it goes down to certain categories of folks. And so we kind of have to go the best we can tell by the evidence that we have from Martin, which isn't a whole lot. But the best we can tell from his situation, the research shows that he would be, and if he's alive, he's there's nowhere to find him. He's still out, he's out and about living life, maybe under a different name or something like that. We don't know. But the research of where we find, this was if we find folks that are not alive. And what it said was, in his situation, chances are, that's what this is really saying, is more people are found than not. His age group, his situation, it's usually off of a well-walked trail somewhere. And that's saying that if he's not alive, we don't know that. But there is quite a bit of research out there about that. The problem is we don't know, we don't have a lot of evidence about Martin's state of mind and that kind of thing leading up to this.
A lot of listeners had submitted questions regarding how Martin had been acting towards friends and roommates leading up to his disappearance, since we know that often people will confide in friends instead of a parent.
I think one of the things that a lot of them said is is, and his dad alluded to it in his interview on your other podcast, Martin had had to leave school for a situation. And, you know, before that, he'd spent his freshman year associating with the fraternity a lot. So he had missed a semester of all their activities and functions. And when he came back, they said he was a little different. But, you know, a lot of that is they've kind of grown and there's new folks in the fraternity. So they said he was a little more withdrawn, but nothing they thought was unusual. The only thing in some interviews that some folks did say was a little unusual is, you know, kids his age have little chat text message groups. And about 2 to 3 days before he went missing, he had a high school group of folks that went to the beach together, and he left that chat group. They all got a message that said Martin Roberts has left the group. And then there was a group of freshman pledges in his fraternity, and they all also got a message that he had left their group. You know, didn't say he was going to harm himself or anything like that. It just said Martin Roberts has left the group. And when we talked to those folks, they said, well, we were going to ask him, you know, what was the deal? Why did you leave the group? But, you know, that's when he went missing. So there's, you know, I was looking, that was the hope, was there something that precipitated, hey, why is he leaving these groups on, you know, 2 days before he's leaving? But there's nothing that we found in interviews or surveillance video or anything that would lead us to believe that something happened those 2 days that he chose, but it did look like he had some type of plan to kind of dissociate with those folks.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs. And then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. The next question was submitted by a listener, Laura. Remember in part one, John explained to us how there were periods of time that were unaccounted for, and Martin had been telling people that he was hanging out with one group and telling that group he was hanging out with the other group, but no one knows exactly what he was doing. Laura asked if they'd been able to identify a pattern for those times.
Well, to start with on that particular situation, I listened to part one of your podcast on this, and Mr. Roberts did a really good job of kind of explaining how this happened. The first thing to say is we don't know. But after saying that, he would come in to his roommates, and he, you know, would say, oh, I've been with these people. And then later, you know, we've talked with other folks, and he would allude that he had been, you know, with these other people. Well, when we go back and interview the stories don't really add up as to where he really was. So we were, this case has been really frustrating in some ways, because we have worked extremely hard to try to find Martin, and almost with no success. Obviously we haven't found him, but also with no even like small successes. So as investigators, it can be really frustrating when you work for weeks and you don't get anything, if that makes sense. So, you know, after months and months of getting nothing, our chief of police, you know, we meet about this regularly. And one of the things that was said in one of the meetings is somebody has got to know something. And so our chief of police sat down and wrote a letter basically to our population and just said that. He said, somebody has got to know something. Please, we need you to come forward and give us the information that you have. We even gave some anonymous routes for people to do that, but we received nothing. So this has been, for our investigators here, it's been, of course, it's been terrible for the family. I'm not making light of that at all. But for the investigators, it's been really frustrating just because, kind of pouring our hearts and soul into something and then just nothing really is coming back to us as far as good substantial leads. And in police work, you've got, if you work hard enough, something will come to you to work on. And it's just not been the case in this one. We've had lots of leads, but nothing that's been able to be substantiated as a solid lead.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself, about, somebody has to know something. You always feel like he must have mentioned something to somebody or had help. I mean, you think about how difficult it would be to just up and leave your life and start over somewhere else, and to do it with little to no resources or no assistance seems very, very difficult. And that's what I kept wondering, is there somebody out there who was helping him that has done a good job at concealing their identity and connection to Martin?
That is the question that we have all laid on our pillows many nights and pondered ourselves, trying to think of who that person could be and where they are and how can we find a way to interact with them. So, I know lots of folks listen to your podcast, and so I would definitely plead, if anybody does know anything about it, to call Crime Stoppers or call our police department and let us know. And I know you give out those numbers at the end, so that'd be great.
Yeah, and I got a lot of questions from people asking if his roommates or fraternity brothers were forthcoming and, with information. And I kept thinking to myself about it, that these kids seem like they were kind of preoccupied with the college life. Like you said, they were going to the beach, and whatever he was doing just didn't even seem like it was on their radar.
Yeah, this was a situation where Martin just kind of did his own thing. And his roommates did their own thing. And I mean, there were times where they crossed paths, and they, I'm sure, did things together and all that. But yeah, in a college, especially kind of the fraternity environment, everybody's doing their own thing. And, nobody really gets in each other's business, so to speak. It's different than like a family setting where, if somebody starts acting a little weird in your household, you're going to notice that quickly. But just like Mr. Roberts said in part one, these guys are all doing their own thing, and they may be days before they see each other, and that's normal to them because that's the living situation that they have. But another interesting thing about this one is, Martin Roberts fits the description of a lot of fraternity guys on campus. His clothing description, his height, his weight, he really, by his physical characteristics, would blend in very well. And so, interestingly enough, to answer one of the questions that you just mentioned to us earlier, is the roommates were very forthcoming. We've interviewed them all at least once, and some of them three, and even maybe even four times. So, because we kind of had to go back and forth with them as a resource, they've been very forthcoming. And so, when we first met with the leadership of the fraternity that Martin was part of, they all, I looked around, I met with, there were three young men there, and they were wearing the same clothing description that Martin Roberts was wearing the day he went missing. So the shorts, the shoes, you know, the pullover, the, you know, it just, it's almost like an unofficial uniform, so to speak, for fraternity guys on campus. It's just a really common thing to be wearing. And so we've had lots of folks call in and say, I think I saw Martin Roberts. He was walking down, you know, this street. This was somewhere near campus. And, you know, that's all they know, is they thought they saw him. And so, you know, we rush out there, and there's either nobody or there's lots of guys standing around that fit that description. So it makes it really tough.
And one of the things his dad alluded to about him as well is not even physically. He wasn't the person to try to be in the front of the picture or stand out. So he didn't do those things. You know, he's not wearing outlandish clothes. His hair's not pink. I mean, there are students here that if they went missing, you could find them in 10 minutes because they look so much different. But he kind of just looked like your standard college freshman, you know, that played soccer in high school. And again, as Lieutenant alluded to, when some of this stuff got to the beach, he's wearing an outfit that looks like what a lot of kids wear at the beach. So we just got tons of calls from folks. Hey, I think he's here. I think he's here. You know, within 20 minutes, he's 300 miles away from the place that somebody saw him last. But it's unfortunate. You know, he does look like a lot of people. One of the things with the fraternity search was, and again, those guys were super helpful. That weekend, they were out every day doing searches. We were doing some interviews that day and just, you know, these guys, they like their version of camping and hiking is a little different from folks that go off the grid. And I talked to a sorority girl and she said, you know, if you let them go out on their own, you're going to end up searching for them too, because they'll get lost. So, you know, it's one of those things where there wasn't that, you know, it's not a fraternity that goes out for week long hikes and learns navigation and things like that. They kind of do standard fraternity things where it's mostly in town, and they do occasionally go to areas where they camp and then come back. But we've even searched the areas. The gentlemen in the fraternity were extremely helpful, saying, hey, these are areas that we consider kind of sacred to us. We do some rituals here. We went, searched those. We searched them early in the investigation, and then we went back several months later with the SBI's cadaver dogs, you know, in a worst case scenario type possibility, and just crisscross the area for hours, but nothing at all. So, you know, I don't know that there was another area that he would have been associated with the fraternity that's out in the woods that we, you know, didn't search with multiple different types of searches.
One of the things we did early on, really early on, is we met with the leadership of his fraternity, and they made it very clear that they were going to be doing some searching on their own, and they were going to help us do searches that we organized, but they were going to organize their own searches. Basically, we had a really quick kind of, you know, land search 101 class with them and explained to them, you know, the methods in which we use to search for people, so that they were doing smart searches, and gave them tips on, you know, how to keep the searchers safe and that kind of thing. So the fraternity was really good with coordinating with us, telling us where they'd been, where they'd searched, and those kinds of things. They did a few things out on the Parkway, the Blue Ridge Parkway in that area.
The Blue Ridge Parkway area, that's where there was a sighting that you guys aren't 100% certain was him.
Kind of in that area, and I feel it's more likely than not it could have been him, because this young lady was in a sorority and was familiar with him. And actually another young lady not long after that said that it could have been him in the same area. And again, that's what becomes difficult, as John alluded to in his interview, is as soon as you leave our town, we're kind of in a bowl. And within a mile, you're in some of the densest woods you can find. That area that they said they may have seen him is, you know, about a mile or two from the Blue Ridge Parkway, which once you get on that, you know, it's nearly 500 miles long. So there's not a great way to search that. You know, a lot of the searches that people did were on trails. And again, an issue is if somebody, whether they're intending to do self-harm or they're intending for you not to find them, they're not going to remain on those trails. With North Carolina, if you're familiar with like Eric Rudolph, he was able to hide for just a long, long time with nobody even knowing where he was at. The woods, especially around here, are really conducive to either staying hidden, or if worst case scenario, somebody has done self-harm, it's very, very difficult to find. So that's definitely been something that's, even with these searches, you could probably, if he's out there in the woods, you could walk within 30 feet of him and not a chance you could have seen him when they're doing these searches.
Another very popular question that was sent in by many people was whether or not they'd looked into any subcultures or cults. Could Martin have found a group that could be helping him conceal his location?
Actually, we've done a lot, and one of the first things we didn't do, but John and Abby, his wife, actually, there's a group here that the gentleman is on a show. He runs an organization called Turtle Island, where he's out kind of off the grid, named Eustace Conway. I believe that's his last name. And he's on a Discovery Channel show where he lives off the grid, and the parents thought, you know, he's got a 300-acre spread out here. Maybe our son has gone there. Maybe that's where he's going to learn these things. And he was extremely helpful to them, and he said, you know, he's not here. You know, we would certainly tell you if he wanted to come here and he wanted to try to live off the grid, we would certainly let him, but we'd also, you know, let you guys know that he's safe. They've checked in with him several times. That hasn't happened. We went to some folks gave us some anonymous tips about some, I wouldn't call them cults, but some sub or counterculture areas in Asheville. Captain LeBeau actually drove to those areas and interviewed some of the leaders, went out on the farms and stuff, and they were like, you know, we haven't seen him, but, you know, we encourage folks to come here, but we also would encourage them to let folks know they're okay. So there's posters in Asheville, there's posters in Wilmington, we're at some of these counterculture places, but, you know, there's been nothing where anybody has said, this is what he's done. So, you know, we've looked into it, but again, it's very frustrating because there's nothing that points us in any direction. We've looked through thousands of emails and things like that, and there's no, you know, interest in those type things or anything. So it's very difficult.
Many of you wrote in asking whether or not the letter that was left behind was analyzed by a handwriting expert to see if it was, in fact, written by Martin.
The letter, the parents seem very, John and his wife seem very confident that it's Martin's handwriting. And so we have looked at other samples of his handwriting as well, and we tend to agree that it very much looks like the same handwriting. And nobody else really has access to his room prior to finding that note. So it certainly seems logical, and all the evidence seems to point to that it is written by Martin. We don't really want to put out exactly what the letter said, but the letter was very, it's a personal thing, and it was very sort of wrapping things up. And so the letter doesn't say, I'm going to go harm myself, nor does it say, I'm not going to go harm myself. But it does have some past tense words in it, and it does seem to come from a person who is planning a big change, if that makes sense.
On one hand, it seems almost impossible to most of us that someone could disappear and not show up on the radar anywhere, because in today's world, just about everything is tracked. But on the other hand, it does happen. Just this past week, a teen who went missing from Alabama in December of 2015 was found in El Paso, Texas.
In this day and time, especially for Martin's generation, if, you know, he is eluding, you know, any kind of trace electronically, then he has done a fantastic job of it. Because it's so hard now. You can't do anything. You know, one of our functions here at the police department is we have a strong ICAC program, which is Internet Crimes Against Children program here at Boone Police Department. And one thing I've learned in supervising those cases is that if you do anything with a computer, you are leaving a very easy to find trail. And so that goes for debit cards, that goes for, you know, anything to do with a digital device at all. And we all know most of us sort of live and die by that smartphone in our hands, and our banking information is on there. Everything we do works through that phone now. So for him to go a full year now on Friday and totally elude that is pretty remarkable.
One thing that for me that really kind of, because again, I thought, well, there's no way that he can be doing this. But when we had some folks from the folks at NCMEC and NamUs were wonderful, and they actually offered a lot of resources. We had some folks come and look at the file, and one of those guys said, you know, I know it seems not logical, but he mentioned a case where a gentleman was gone for 10 years and turned up, and he wasn't purposely eluding. He had a number of mental illnesses, and he had been from shelter to shelter. And what this gentleman had told me, he said, you know, a lot of those folks have confidentiality clauses and things like that, and they don't think, because once you go to homeless shelters, you look a lot different. And it turns out that this man had sought some type of counseling or something, and when somebody tried to get him some help, they found out he was missing, and he reconnected with his family. So from there, you know, we reached out to homeless shelters, mental health facilities all over the state, and actually nationwide. But again, a lot of them still have, hey, we can't tell you he's not here, we can't tell you he is here, but we'll put your flyer up. So, you know, these folks at NCMEC told me there's a lot of cases they have that don't seem plausible or logical, but people do show up, you know, years later, and they can't articulate where they've been because there is some type of mental illness or they're doing something. A lot of them aren't purposely missing. Now, there have been some where he was telling me that people have been purposely missing and family members hid them for years. You know, until we know, we're still looking for somebody that's actively out there, whether they're hiding or they're in trouble or whatnot. Any lead that we have, we still check into them as quick as we can.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows.
When I was going through the questions that had been submitted, I was surprised to see that a handful of people had asked why law enforcement has been looking so hard for someone who appears to be voluntarily missing. I think it's important to remember that while it may appear that way, we don't know for sure why Martin is missing. What if his disappearance is not what it appears to be on the surface? What if he's dealing with some kind of mental health issues and could use assistance? What if whatever he was dealing with at the time made him vulnerable to someone who was looking to take advantage? We don't know the answers to those questions, so that's why it's important to keep looking until he's found.
Yeah, if we find an individual who's an adult, who isn't in any kind of danger to themselves or other people, and they just wanted to leave, then yeah, that we all have that ability. You know, we don't have to stay in contact with our families. We don't have to live in the town, you know, where people expect us to live. But until, for example, in Martin Roberts' case, until we know that he's safe to be wherever he is, and he's, you know, he's there voluntarily, then we're going to keep looking.
And again, with us, you know, I know some folks even locally have said, well, if he wants to be missing, again, why don't you just leave him alone? Well, we don't know that. So from a law enforcement perspective, again, it's not illegal for him to be missing, but what we want to do is lay eyes on him, talk to him, you know, get an idea. If he's out on a farm living by himself and he says, yeah, just tell my parents I'm fine, then we're good with that. I think his parents would be good with that, a little saddened. But, you know, we want to see him, and if he is got some mental illness or something that could be treated or something like that, then certainly we take some different steps. But the thing is, nobody has come forward and say, hey, I'm Martin Roberts, I'm fine, come look at me. So we have to go looking for him.
The next question comes from Denise, and she asked about the possibility of joining a radical group like ISIS. Initially, I thought this question was a bit out there, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought that we do hear about this happening. Most of us can't even fathom how something like this happens, but we do hear about it from time to time on the news.
You know, the answer for that is the same as anything is we don't have any information. We don't have any evidence that says he would have joined any group like that, but we don't know.
Now, one of the things on that I do some of our intelligence work, and when you see the ISIS does have a foothold in, I guess, recruitment here, it's normally through Twitter and through Facebook and things like that. I did Facebook warrants. I did Twitter, all these different social media things. I can tell you from Facebook, every single person he looked up, every single organization, there's nothing like that. You know, basically in those type of social media things, there's nothing where anything. We did right now, could he join ISIS? Could he join one of these organizations that go overseas to help folks? But we ended up doing, so far, and it's still an ongoing total, I've done 34 separate search warrants for whether it's Google, Facebook, different emails and things like that. And every one of those things, there's thousands of pages we get back, and we pour through them, and there's, you know, every once in a while there's something that gets us to a different search warrant. But most of those things are kind of dead ends. But unfortunately, there isn't an ISIS website we can go check and see who's on there. But there's a number of stuff you could feasibly do. And I know his dad had mentioned that I had told him, you know, if you wanted to go to California or somewhere and work on a marijuana farm for cash, you could do that. The difficulty would be getting there. We actually check local bus routes and things like that. But, there's so many possibilities that we kind of ran everything down that was feasible for us to do. Obviously, we can't send anybody to California and check the pot farms, but it's frustrating. Normally, I worked on this case for months straight and had no other cases. And you find something. You find somebody that he communicated a lot with. Hey, this is the person that we need to go talk to. There wasn't that. It seemed like a lot of his friends said, well, you know, we just assumed that since he wasn't talking to us a lot, it was because he had just got back. You know, he went missing in April, but he had just returned to Boone in January. So he had spent a good amount of time away from these friends, away from school. And they just assumed, well, maybe since we made new friends, we had new relationships, he just didn't feel a part of that. That's why we didn't see him as much.
Another popular question was whether or not he could have traveled overseas with a group like the Peace Corps.
Well, we checked with those organizations, the ones that we know about, and with no results.
And one of the things that they did tell us is, you know, whether you're in the Peace Corps or the Merchant Marine or whatever it is, you still can't go overseas without a passport. And his passport is with his parents. So we actually got up with some federal agencies, and they said, yeah, he doesn't have a different passport. He's never asked for a duplicate or anything like that. And they said his numbers from that passport have not been scanned anywhere in the world. You know, that doesn't mean you couldn't go into Mexico without a passport. But, you know, flights and things like that, you know, having gone overseas myself, it is not easy to get into another country.
The next question comes from Jean, and she asked for clarification on whether or not Martin took his driver's license or any other identification with him.
The only thing that I know that he doesn't, that he has with him, and I don't know if he has an extra one, but is his actual, like, state-issued identification. And we had originally thought that he had his bank card, which is why we were so quickly went after the bank. But his parents, when they had he had a number of dirty clothes and things like that in his room, and they ended up finding those in between some, like in the pocket of one of his pants. So he actually didn't have access to his financial cards. And then one of those actually, he had sent off for a new one because he lost his, and he had told his dad that. Well, that came actually after he had gone missing, showed up at the apartment.
And with his ID, we don't know that he has it. It's unaccounted for. So logic says it's probably with him, but it could be lost as well. We don't know.
And another possibility we looked at, and again, just like a lot of college students, he did have an ID that wasn't valid, but it looks, without running that in the state that you're in, it looks very, very valid. And that was left. And, you know, we ran the possibility, well, could he have made a fake ID? You know, unfortunately, these companies are not very forthcoming if you call them and say, a lot of them are on the dark web and they don't have a contact information. But the ones I found, when you try to contact them and say, hey, I'm with law enforcement, did this person make a fake ID from this email? You know, they're not going to tell you. So that's been kind of frustrating. I do know where he got his original fake one, and I do have the kind of the documentation from that. But, you know, there's no emails from anything on his Google email that I did with the multiple search warrants that was, hey, thank you for ordering this. We're sending this. Just nothing that we found at all. And I've done, I think, 3 separate Google search warrants going backwards and forth after, you know, before he went missing for about a year and actually since. And there's been nothing.
That may lead somebody who's listened to this to think, well, you know, your law enforcement just, you know, make these companies tell you if he did this or not. But you're talking about companies that are overseas, and we don't have that authority to demand information from a company who, you know, has probably run out of somebody's basement, you know, in another country somewhere. So that's not something within our authority.
The most commonly asked question from the audience was whether or not Martin could have been questioning his sexuality and felt like he had to walk away because people in his life may not accept that.
But we don't have any information that says that Martin was questioning sexuality or was involved in any kind of activities, you know, that could be harmful to him. We don't have any evidence or any information that says that. Now, having said that, we're leaving anything on the table because we know so little. And so if we decide that we take that off the table because that's not a possibility, we're limiting our investigation and possibly ruining a chance, you know, to find Martin. So we don't know is the answer, and we don't take anything kind of for granted as given knowledge because we know so little. You know, the only information that we can really go on is past information. And, you know, everything that we know about is that Martin had a, you know, just a normal, attracted to females and had ex-girlfriends and that kind of thing. And so no information that's the case. But again, we're not taking anything off the table because we don't want to limit our investigation.
One of the things about our area is that, you know, we are in the South, but with the college being the major focal point of our town, you know, over half the population, there are a number of resources and organizations associated with the school for folks that, whether they're transgender or whatnot. So there's a lot of resources where if he is dealing with that, that he probably would have spoken to somebody. And I think those folks would definitely come forward and say, yeah, you know, this is a time in our nation where we can openly discuss these type of things. We talk to him about that. But, you know, none of those organizations have said he's ever talked to anybody in the organization or asked them for information. So, and again, there's nothing on the thousands of emails that I've looked through. So, you know, again, we don't take that off the table, but it's not something that we had any leads that we followed up on because there was no leads.
The frustrating part for us is we don't have any way to speak to everybody. You know, our best chance at that is media and things like this podcast. And so, you know, we put out a press. The Roberts family has done an excellent job of finding ways to get Martin's name and picture out there. And we try to do the exact same thing. And so just trying to just keep it in the news, and maybe somebody will see something that knows something and they'll come forward and tell us. So, that's the main thing, is just doing our best to try to keep it out there so that, you know, we can just get it in front of as many people as we can.
When we look at all of the information that Martin's family has given us and now the Boone Police Department, there isn't one thing sticking out as an obvious place to search for Martin. We're left with more questions than answers in this case. Where did Martin go on April 21st, 2016? Was someone helping him plan his disappearance? What was he doing during those times that he was unaccounted for? Was he using that time to plan, or was he just pulling away from those who were close to him? It does seem like he had been pulling away from his friends a bit shortly before he disappeared, but they didn't seem to think much of it at the time because he had just come back from being gone for an entire semester. Nothing that Martin was doing was jumping out to anyone as a giant red flag. One thing that gives me hope is that searching that he was doing about joining the military. I'm convinced that the Boone Police Department has eliminated the military as an option for where he could be. My hope is that he was considering some different options and he just chose something else. When you're in college, you have so much more freedom all of a sudden, but you still have expectations weighing on you, even when they're just expectations that you put on yourself. It can be tough when you realize that where you envisioned yourself going isn't really a good fit for you. I remember being Martin's age and dreading telling my parents certain things. Things that now seem so small, but at the time felt like a huge weight. I hope that Martin hears this and realizes that no matter what, his family just wants to know that he's okay, and nothing is more important than that. If you have any information about Martin's disappearance, the Boone Police Department asked me to stress that you can remain anonymous. If you go through High Country Crime Stoppers, you can call 828-268-6959 or 828-737-0125. You can also text TIP along with your tip to 274-637. If you go to highcountrycrimestoppers.com, you can submit an anonymous tip online, and it gives you the ability to continue communicating anonymously in the event that they have further questions about your tip. As a reminder, Martin's family is holding an event on April 21st. The event will be held at 6:30 p.m. at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Gastonia, North Carolina. They will also be live streaming the event in the Facebook group called Help Find Martin Roberts. That brings us to the end of episode 74. I would like to thank Lieutenant Chris Hatton, Detective Kevin Wilson, and Captain Andy Lebeau for being so helpful. I think the way they've handled Martin's case is how we wish every missing person's case would be handled. A big thanks to them not only for speaking with me, but also for everything they've done and continue to do. Hopefully, all of that hard work will pay off and Martin will be found soon. Please take the time to go check out Martin's pictures and share his flyer. He could be anywhere. When I was on vacation a few days ago, I just so happened to be right along the Appalachian Trail here in Pennsylvania, so I took some flyers with me and hung them at different access points. You never know who may have seen them. I apologize if I didn't get to your question in this episode. I got hundreds of emails with questions, and I tried to pull out the ones that were most frequently asked, but I did read every email, and I appreciate the time that you all took to write. If you would like to contact me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishedPod. There is a page and a group on Facebook, and I'm also on Instagram. If you would like to submit a case, there is a form at TheVanishedPodcast.com. Join me next week. I will be back with a new episode about another intriguing case.
I know as a parent, I can't imagine, you know, I try to empathize with them, but we just can't imagine what it's like for a young person to go missing. And they've been very, very patient with us and just, you know, understanding at the difficulties that we're having with this case. And the nice thing is we've opened it up to Kim and John, say, hey, if you've got an idea, no matter how outlandish, you know, let us know. And, you know, we'll check into anything. And we have done, you know, some things where they're like, well, hey, could you check this? We've checked that. And, you know, at least it makes them feel like they're able to be a little bit of a part of the investigation. But again, it's one of those things that's, all these turned up to be dead ends, and it's kind of saddening and frustrating for us.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.